It's Legal Defense with Kirk O'Bear on 1330 and 101.5 WHBL.
Good morning and welcome to Legal Defense. I'm back. Did you notice, John?
I'm back. You know what? I am so happy that you're back. It's awesome having you back. How was vacation?
It was awesome. Hey, I went camping in North Carolina, went out to the Outer Banks.
Yeah, it was like on an island, like an island unto yourself, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, there's some other campers there, but this is on one of the uninhabited, unpopulated, basically, islands on the Outer Banks. It's part of the Cape Lookout National Seashore, and the only way you can get there is this ferry that takes you and pretty much drops you off. And they have park rangers that are there during the daytime to make sure that, you know, you're not being eaten by sharks and stuff like that.
You guys didn't turn into like the Lord of Flies?
Right. We haven't set up our own government or something. I don't know. And then they leave and then you're just there. You're kind of, you know, stuck. So it was kind of wild. But
so I ended up having... You carry enough provisions for like a week or something?
Well, I was only there for 3 days.
Oh. Okay.
But yes, carried enough provisions for 3 days. But I drove down there because I have a four-wheel drive Jeep, and you have to have a four-wheel drive vehicle to go anywhere on this island. And they have designated areas where you can drive, but they're not roads. It's just sand dunes and things like that. So I tried for months to try and reserve a car down there, and I learned a lot about how rental car companies – view people that are trying to rent 4x4s or four-wheel drive, because every single one I talked to, they were really suspicious about what I wanted to do with it.
What do they think you were going to do with it?
Well, you know, they're like, you're not authorized to go like four-wheeling. You cannot go mudding or any of those things. And you can't haul anything with it, because that's not, if you read the fine print, you're not supposed to do any of that stuff when you rent a vehicle. So they just don't have these in their arsenal in their fleet, you know. So apparently Avis had two of them out of their 10,000 vehicles that they have throughout the state, and the best they could do was say that they could put in a requisition for it, but I had about a 1 in 10 chance of actually getting a four-wheel drive vehicle. So I said forget it, and canceled the whole thing and just drove down there because it was frankly easier than dealing with the whole hassle. But that is a hike down there. It's about 20 hours worth of driving. So,
did you go straight through?
No, I broke it up into 2 days because I've done it. I've done it where I've gone straight through.
No, yeah, I've done that too, and that is insane.
Just no fun, especially because you have to go through the mountains. You can't get from here to there without going through mountains, and that's not fun. You know, driving at midnight or 2 a.m. through the mountains, it's just ridiculous. But anyway, had a great time.
Awesome.
Another thing I learned is that this time of year, there's a particular type of fly. I think they're called yellow flies. We don't have them around here. But down on the coast in Carolina, they have a hatch about three times a year. So for like 2 or 3 days, they are these vicious biting flies, and they will
– ouch.
You know, they'll land on you and fly away in 2 seconds with a piece of meat off of your body.
Not just a little blood.
Timed it perfectly so that it was, you know, right when these yellow flies were hatching. So that was interesting.
They don't have spray to keep those off of you?
Well, I use like the regular off backwoods or, you know, deep woods stuff. And it keeps them from basically swarming and killing you. But you still have to, you know, swat them off. So if I didn't have that stuff, I think I probably wouldn't have made it back. Or my bones would have been all that's left.
But. I'm just picturing like this cartoon image of you being eaten in like 1/2 a second by a bunch of these flies. Okay.
I mean, they're pretty vicious. But so just another funny little story before we get into the legal stuff. You know, I was growing my hair pretty long. It's been months since I got a haircut. So I was getting to the point where I was looking like Robert Plant, you know, flowing hair in the breeze and everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty
Fabio.
Long.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe something like that. I prefer the rock and roll image, but, you know.
Okay, I understand.
I'll go with whatever you can.
No, that's
Fabio
fine.
Thing,
that's
so.
Fine.
So, yeah, it's getting long. And then, you know, I finally got to the point where I can't stand it anymore, because especially when the wind blows and it's just like a big sail of my hair goes, you know, flapping in the wind. And it just got to be such a pain. And I, you know, I did, anyway, so I always do this. You know, Tony Cotton does, our good friend Tony Cotton, he does the same thing where he'll grow his hair long and then he'll go and get it cut short. But I go to this place called The Barbershop, and it happened, it's a barbershop. They call it The Barbershop. And it's really cool because it's like a man place. You know, they've got like sports on.
Oh, that's great.
And they've, you know, they've got coffee and peanuts and things like that. So it's really oriented towards, you know, kind of a man experience.
The man experience.
But yes. There's this one girl who works there, knows how to do a perfect flat top. And I learned years ago that if
I'm
going to
get one. Did you
give
yourself a flat top?
Well, I'm getting there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is yes, but let me tell you the story leading along the way. So she knows when I make an appointment every roughly, you know, 6 months or whatever it is, that I'm going to want a flat top. So she sets like extra time aside because it takes longer, you know? And I make sure that she's there when I go in so that I don't have to worry about it too much. So sure enough, she's there. But my hair was longer probably than it's ever been when I went to go get a flat top. And she just looked at me and she's like, "You've got to be kidding me." And she's like,
"Why?
All right. What? Well, just because it's such a – you're losing so much hair." You
know? Oh, my God. That's funny.
By the time it was over, I mean, the ground was – it was atrocious how much hair was left behind. So
I know. Well, I'm not going to spend time talking about – I have the exact same situation, but I have the exact same situation. So, and I'd, frankly, I'd rather not talk about it. So let's talk about the law. How about that?
Yeah. You know, why not? That's what we're here for. So we,
you know, it's crazy. It's just a crazy idea I just had. And I think the thing that's most pressing on my mind, at least, is the potential – that we could have a president of these United States who thinks that it's perfectly okay to pick and choose your judges based on their race or gender or yep. or religion. So,
or they're just their background.
Yeah.
Because the judge you're talking about was born
Judge
in
Curiel.
Indiana.
Gonzalo.
Yeah, born in Indiana. He's a 100% American citizen. He doesn't yep. even look Hispanic. He just has a Hispanic sounding possibly name. And you heard what Governor Walker said earlier this week. He said he's asking Donald Trump to apologize and take back the the comments that
which
he made
I'm
about.
Sure that Mr. Trump will jump on any request made by our governor. I'm just no doubt about that. He's going to put that like first in his queue of things to do, right?
He'll have some way. He's already tried to explain it away. Like, you know, he loves Mexicans, and there's really no evidence. I don't even know if this guy's from Mexico or his family was from Mexico or
he
anything
does.
Like that.
His parents were Mexican. Yeah, so he's a first generation American, but. I think the more interesting
That's the American dream, you know. I mean, first generation American and you become a judge, that's pretty awesome. That's what we believe in.
I think everybody's heard about this. All of our listeners have heard about this, but I think probably what they haven't heard about is the background of he can't just brush this off as a one-off. He can't just say, "Oh, this is just, you know, it's just like off the cuff," because he's been doing this for years. So listen to this. Your Honor, quote, Your Honor wrote a letter for Mr. Trump, harbors deep-seated antagonism that would make impartial adjudication impossible, end quote. That was in 2008. His lawyers wrote that in a lawsuit regarding something entirely different than this. It was than the Judge Curiel thing. And he's been doing that for years. He turns accusations into like elbows out legal campaigns. He did this. He did it against an African American judge and a white woman judge. And we also heard him talk about, well, you know, what if it was a Muslim? I think that would be – we'd have to recuse the Muslim too. So in other words, I think what he wants is he wants racial courts, okay? So we're going to take our country back from all these minorities and who are now sitting in powerful federal benches. And for guys like me, they have to be my religion and they have to be my color. Or they are inherently unbiased.
Well, and by the way, what does any of that have to do with adjudicating the case? Does he honestly believe that someone's ethnic heritage has anything to do with rule? Isn't this the Trump University case that we're talking about anyway?
Yes, it's a Trump University case.
Well, hey, we got to take a break. We'll talk more about this when we get back. But in the meantime, please listen carefully to these very important messages.
You're listening to Legal Defense with Kirk O'Bare on 1330 and 101.5 WHBL.
Welcome back. We were talking about the recent comments by Donald Trump against the judge that's presiding over this Trump University case. Hey, I want to talk about the case a little bit too, because this is really interesting.
Oh,
especially in light of the Trump comments about whether the judge can be impartial or
not.
Because you know the whole history of Trump University. Do you know about this?
Oh, I absolutely do. I mean,
okay.
he's giving like, there's no certificates or degree, but basically giving quote advice and quote on how to do real estate deals.
Right. And it's nothing more than basically a
seminar.
Correspondence course. It's like the things that you used to look up in the back of Mad Magazine in the 60s, and they tell you you could get rich. You know, send us $5 and we'll show you how to become a millionaire. Except the tuition for Trump University is what it starts at about $29,000 and goes
up
from there.
It's just insane. It's insane that people are falling for this.
It's a tremendous amount of money. And most of the, you know, quote unquote victims of this, you know, it's basically a scheme, it's a scam, is all it was. They were selling something that was worthless. And the people that were teaching the courses, I mean, I looked into this. It's kind of funny. One guy was a former manager at Lowe's, you know, hardware store.
Mm-hmm.
And another guy
probably maxed out his credit cards.
Yeah. And another guy was somebody that had been involved with managing a Chili's restaurant, I believe. That was his managerial experience. So, I mean, they're not professors by any means. And you have to use the term university in great big quotes because, you know, it's really not. You know, it's not a university by any means, but
this is just him trying to do what all scam artists do, which is take advantage of people's desires to move up their station in life. And
you know,
and
you ever think
convince them that he's the ticket to do that?
If you've ever suffered from insomnia, like I sometimes do, you see those infomercials. They come on at about 2-3 in the morning, and it's some guy that's living the high life, you know, and he's got a Jaguar and he's at a country club and he's, you know, he's too busy golfing to continue.
Last week I was poor as dirt.
Right.
Now look what I have.
So for like however much money, $19.95, you can get this book that, and he'll tell you all the different ways that you can become.
People want to believe so bad. It's sort of like weight loss gimmicks. They want to believe that you don't have to get off your butt at all. All you have to do is take a pill and then turn on Oprah and you're going to lose weight. You know?
Well, the obvious thing that occurs to me, and I'm not sure why it doesn't occur to everybody else, is that if this guy is so good at making millions, why is he selling books for $19.95? I mean, that doesn't even make any sense. So, you know, I guess
this is
just one of the many, many, many different ways that Donald Trump had of making money. I heard another interesting statistic just in the context of all this. Trump, either himself or a business that he's been affiliated with either as an owner or on the board of directors or in some other corporate responsible capacity, the Trump empire, so to speak, has been the subject of over 3,500 lawsuits, which is – by far surpasses any other corporate entity in existence in the span of history.
Yeah. So I think that was a study by some couple of reporters at the New York Times, and they even admitted there's no way that this is the final number. We couldn't even come close to searching every pair. So we don't really know what the final number is.
And the interesting thing about that is that a lot of these cases are ones where, you know, something having to do with Trump, some company or some affiliated something or other with Trump is suing somebody else for money, or it's some sort of corporate takeover type thing. It's a predatory financial situation. But just as often, there is where Trump is the defendant in being sued for things. And I mean, it's clogging our court systems. I mean, so that is an unprecedented thing in terms of any other president in the history of the United States, or any other presidential candidate, I should say, has never been as involved as a, you know, corporate defendant or personal defendant in this much litigation. But also, interestingly enough, he is the only candidate for president that has neither served his country in any form of governmental capacity whatsoever, or has had any sort of experience or affiliation with actual government functioning. The closest president would be Dwight Eisenhower, who had military experience only and then transitioned directly to the presidency.
You know, Kirk, you say that as sort of a negative, but I think there's millions of people who would say, that's awesome.
I understand that, but it's
and
also
– they voted for him.
I know that. I understand that philosophy. Yeah. I understand that point, yeah. And I think that is why he appeals to a lot of people.
Do you want to know something? I'm going to tell you something, and I'm going to tell the world something I'm kind of embarrassed to say right now. But I'm going to say it because it's pertinent and it's on point. I was driving back from a meeting Tuesday night, I guess, when the election was, and Donald Trump is making his grand victorious speech. And there was a couple of moments that I caught myself going, you know, I kind of agree with that. Mm-hmm. He was talking about, you know what? Both parties have elites in them that are only build the system to perpetuate their own power. And I was like, you know what? I kind of agree with that. That's kind of like – and he was talking about how Hillary Clinton and the Clintons writ large, they, you know, have really enriched themselves at the government trough. And that's kind of true.
Well, if that's the only reason that you were willing to consider Trump as a viable candidate, I suppose you'd be voting for Bernie Sanders then, you know.
Probably.
Because –
yeah.
Although he's been a senator, you know, he's got – you know, I think knowledge of how the government works is kind of important though. I mean, if you're going to be president
– it is important, and that's something, you know, Trump lacks entirely.
Yeah.
Entirely. And, you know, we were talking about this particular case with Trump University and Judge Curiel, but really the bigger picture here is how does he – what understanding does he have of – A, the Constitution, or B, the judicial process. And I don't think he has even a rudimentary understanding of either one of those, because we ticked off a couple of the other times where he's criticized judges, and he's done it or he's had his lawyers do it as a litigation strategy, which frankly I think is unethical. I mean, if you have something actual proof or an actual, you know, demonstration of some sort of judicial bias, yeah, you should bring it. But as a general just sort of like litigation strategy where you just want to throw some mud against the wall and see what sticks, that's just unethical, I think. I don't know what you think, but
– I think it is too. I think that's one of the things that, you know, makes lawyers and big corporate types, CEOs of large companies that have a staff of lawyers – it makes the whole legal profession and the involvement that those types have with the law, it makes it so people don't trust the government, you know.
Let me just read you.
And I don't know. It's hard to say because, you know, he obviously climbed to great heights in terms of financial success, relatively speaking. It's hard to say, though, how much money he's actually worth and how truly successful he is because – there have been many failed businesses, many, many bankruptcies. And if you actually did a tally of what – you know, he's got all those buildings and things like that. But like anything, you can make stuff appear to be very much in the black. you can make it look like you've got a great number of assets that have inflated value. I mean, you can get, I could give you a spreadsheet that would make anybody look like they're very rich.
Well, it's like the it's like the richest woman in Wisconsin, the owner of ABC Building Supplies. I don't know if you read that article in the Journal Sentinel about how she doesn't pay any Wisconsin taxes.
Right.
She makes $7 billion a year.
Yeah, but none of it is none of its income, I guess, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever,
but it goes it goes to your point, what you were saying, you know. But let me you know, on Donald Trump's sort of attitude, let me read you a quote by Trump and then a quote by a retired law professor who's kind of a conservative dude about his judicial philosophy. So Trump says, quote, "They ought to look into Judge Curiel. Because what Judge Curiel is doing is a total disgrace, okay? But we will come back in November. Wouldn't that be wild if I'm president and come back and do a civil case?" End quote. So David Post, a retired law professor who writes for the Volokh Conspiracy, I don't know if you are familiar with that law blog, he says this, quote, "This is how authoritarianism starts, with a president who does not respect the judiciary. You can criticize the judiciary system, you can criticize individual cases, and you can criticize individual judges, but the president has to be clear that the law is the law and that he enforces the law. That's his constitutional obligation," end quote. So, I mean, we're coming up on a break, but I think those two things, I think that's a sort of a sounding board for discussion there. Here. So, anyways, I think we'll pick that up on the break after you hear these messages on WHBL.
Now, back to Legal Defense with Kirk O'Bare on 1330 and 101.5 WHBL.
Ooh, yeah. Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that break and that it was fulfilling in every way to you. just one more thing I want to say about the whole Trump thing. And honestly, I am not trying to bash him as a candidate. I'm really interested to see when and if we'll see any sort of substantive discussion. I agree with you. I think it's interesting that this is someone who is not part of the usual players. He's not one of the usual suspects. Mm-hmm. He's not someone that's crafted his life around political ambitions. On the other hand, he's someone
I'm not sure that's entirely true, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know, but I'm assuming that he didn't have his eye on the presidency until at some point later in his life. I don't know. Maybe that's not true. I don't know.
Well, I think the last 10 or 15 years he has, but
yeah. And you know, I think as recently as a year ago, we all thought it was the stupidest thing we ever heard.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I still think it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I'm just saying, you know, it's interesting that he's got this appeal to a lot of people. And I've been doing a lot of talking. You know, my wife is running for office now on the local level.
Right,
it's an entirely different thing. But we,
by the way, I'm gonna move into her district and vote for her.
Oh yeah, she's awesome. By the way, she's got everything lined up perfectly. I mean, she's a lot smarter on all this stuff than I am, but we've been interacting with a lot of people and, you know, having these political discussions. And to a person, a lot of people are, you know, disgusted with this election that's coming up because, you know, there are those that it's hard to find someone who's a genuine fan of any particular candidate. They're there. And they tend to be Bernie people, as a matter of fact. The people that are 100% in, they're Bernie people. There are some very strong Hillary supporters. There's some very strong Trump supporters. But, you know, they're not that frequent. You don't encounter them that frequently. Most of the people that say they'll end up voting for Hillary are doing it because they'd rather vote for Bernie, but they feel like they have to vote for Hillary if she's the one that ends up getting selected.
But, well, there's always Gary Johnson.
Well, yeah. there's John Lennon. I always vote for John Lennon.
no.
Gary he's Johnson, ineligible to be president for a number of reasons, one of which is that he's dead. But, you know, aside from
that's not a problem if you're in Chicago. But
but you can vote if you're dead. You just can't. Can you run for president if you're dead? I don't know.
I think so. I think there's a few – you know, it's probably some dead Kennedys that could pull it off.
Yeah, shot. Absolutely. But let me just kind of wrap this to a conclusion. We can move on to the next topic because the thing that I find is that when people say that they're voting for Trump and they've got a thought in mind. It's always this idea that he's different. He's breaking from what seems to be a politically motivated, you know, and part of the, frankly, the good old boys club, no matter what party you're with. And exactly what you were saying before during our last segment here, what's happened in our country, and I'm not sure it's anything new, this has been going on for a long time, but partisan politics and doing things to promote your particular party to the extent, and it's both parties are guilty of this. Both Democrats and Republicans are guilty of this. But when you look at gerrymandering, you look at issues that try and promote or discourage a particular group of voters from being involved.
You are 100% correct there, yeah.
Obscuring issues. I mean, both parties are guilty of this. And it's something that really seems beside the point. I mean, if we could have some way where everybody was able to learn the issues and vote according to their conscience and their own beliefs, that would be an ideal system. Interestingly enough, that's easy to do. It's just that most people don't either have the gumption, energy, or they just don't know how easy it is to do. I mean, all you got to do is really invest a little bit of time into understanding what the various candidates' positions are. And there's nothing inherent about our election process or the election system itself that disenfranchises people. It's the things that the politicians do to the system to modify it.
You remember a few years ago when we redistricted and after the census, right? And the Republicans were in power. And then there was a claim, a legitimate claim by several minority groups that they had sort of gerrymandered their way into, you know, sort of a permanent majority here in Wisconsin. Yep. And you remember that there were several very conservative federal judges that were demanding that the Republican Party and or the legislators doing the redistricting, you know, come up with all these records about how they made their decisions so that they could determine whether it was racially discriminatory. And they chastised them because they were obviously stonewalling. They were lying. They were doing everything they could to just sort of keep on to power. I wouldn't even say that the Democrats wouldn't do the exact same thing. It's kind of a shameful thing, really.
Yeah, it really is.
And there's
finish your thought, because there's an analogy here to the criminal justice system too.
I agree. But there's plenty of people that I have met who are legislators or have some sort of position of power that I have immense respect for, and I think I wish everybody in government was like you. Everybody in elected office was like you, you know? But there's like a sliver of the total that's like this person, you know? And that's the frustrating part, because I think a lot of people don't seek office because they don't want to, number one, lose all their privacy, and number two, lose all their paycheck, and number if they're really a sharp person, and three, put their family through the hassle of being a public official.
Right, exactly.
And those three things, they keep a lot of awesome people away from public life.
Oh, I know.
And then we end up voting for the people that we get to vote for.
Yeah, you know, on the other hand, I don't think that public officials should be paid a lot, you know, in terms of the economics of it. I think that it should be a public service thing. But compare that with the fact that someone should not be independently well off as a pre-qualification for running for office. It's really hard to
It cuts,
you know,
both ways. Well, look at Herb Kohl. You and I, we're probably more aligned with Herb Kohl's politics. And, you know, his attitude was, you know, nobody can buy me. And he couldn't, right? He didn't even, you know, I don't even know if he accepted donations, but, you know, and that was a nice thing. But the days of Bill Proxmire are gone. Bill Proxmire once, in one campaign, he spent like $5.75, and that was the cost of the postage to send in his election application to the Federal Election Commission.
Oh, I know.
And so, you know.
That's kind of how it's supposed to work, really. I mean, if you think back to when our government was initially organized and they thought any, you know, tavern owner – or, you know, anyone could run for office and run for a.
You know what? A lot of them did. A lot of them did.
Well, I wanted to make the quick analogy to
our
criminal justice system here because there's a similar problem that we have when it relates to the criminal process. And, you know, you invoked the ethical concerns and things like that when we're talking about both parties being at fault with this kind of thing. And one of the phenomena I think that occurs when this is all happening is that one side believes they can justify doing certain things because they see the other side doing it. Or they don't trust the other side and they believe that their own particular motivations for doing a particular thing are more just than, you know, sort of like the concept of telling a little white lie. You know, it's okay because your ultimate goal is noble. And
understood.
I think we see that in the criminal justice system because, I mean, this is what I think happens when I go into court and I see a prosecutor who is doing something that is downright shady.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your initial reaction would be – and I think this is the correct reaction. I'm just saying the first thought that comes to mind is that it's A, unethical. B, if they're seeking justice, they shouldn't be doing this. And C, what is wrong with this person when they're trying to gain an advantage over, you know, something that is supposed to be a truth-seeking, just process. But if you talk to prosecutors that – and the way that they view defense lawyers, and I think a lot of people in the public even view defense lawyers this way, you know, they see us as using trickery, smoke and mirrors. I mean, you hear this all the time. They think that we're doing something sneaky behind the scenes, so they got to be sneaky in order to counteract our sneakiness. So they get like double sneaky, and so that's when you hear arguments like, "Your Honor, I'm just trying to make sure that we have a level playing field here." When I hear that, I blow up.
Oh my god!
Because it's not
totally
a level playing field.
Oh,
it's not supposed to be a level playing field. It's never been
exactly right.
A criminal trial that is a level playing field, and if there was, then it's an unconstitutional trial. That's what it is.
Yeah.
But time for another break. But when we come back. I just want to talk for a second, maybe like 60 seconds. How about that? About the recent development in the Bill Cosby case because it has relevance to our Wisconsin court system.
I'll have you on the timer.
All right. Well, we got one more segment. So, all right. we'll be right back after these messages.
It's Legal Defense with Kirk O'Bear on 1330 and 101.5 WHBL.
Welcome back. We hope you've been enjoying Legal Defense because we aim to please. That's part of the process. You know, it's kind of funny because when you think about it, we just sit here and talk to each other. We spill our brains out and just let our gums flap. And for some reason, people find it entertaining. I don't know why, but they do.
You know,
I get all kinds of positive feedback.
We have between us probably 50 plus years of experience doing what we do, and you know, you pick up. I'm not the smartest guy in the room, maybe, but you know, I picked up a couple of things. 27 years of doing this, so
yeah, exactly. And I, you know, a lot of the feedback I get, I hear from people that don't agree with my politics at all, and they don't necessarily understand the criminal justice system in a way that I wish people would, but they appreciate the insight. They appreciate the comments. They find it entertaining because we go a lot more in depth into a lot of these issues than you can get really anywhere else. There isn't any other radio program like this out there, by the way, where you have defense lawyers talking about the intricacies of the defense system and giving a specific perspective on it.
Even though you and I both have strong opinions, we're both pretty open-minded, I think.
I would agree.
So, I know you are. I am.
Well, just I want to talk about the Bill Cosby situation, the Cos.
60 seconds, go.
All right, 60 seconds. So you know that he was bound over after a preliminary hearing in his recent trial.
Right.
And the lawyers in his case have filed a motion for a new hearing with different rules. And this is interesting because in Wisconsin, we've been living with this same rule for, I want to say, what, five, six, maybe even 7 years now, or is it more?
No, five. Yeah, 2011. Yeah.
Yeah. So about five years then. All right. So we used to have meaningful preliminary hearings, and here's why: because the state would have to call an actual witness that would actually do this thing we call testify.
That's
and we'd be subject to cross-examination and all of the things that are part of a fact-finding process that prevents...
I have never heard of such a thing, Kirk O'Bear.
Well...
this is crazy talk.
Up until 5 years ago, that's how it worked.
What? But, oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry.
But there was a law, a legislative fiat that occurred that took away... basically the right to confront an accuser at a preliminary hearing. The thought process being that a preliminary hearing is merely a showing of probable cause and that the true controversy is not meant to be tried at a preliminary hearing. It is merely to determine if it is – and when they say probable, they really mean possible. I mean, if you look at the case law that talks about what probable cause means in that context, it means exactly what they say it doesn't
plausible.
Mean. Plausible. Plausible. Yeah. Plausible, right. But you know, really, if you're looking at
really
everything
knows
else,
those terms mean anyways. But whatever.
Right, I mean, and they're adjectives, so I mean, you can put whatever sort of meaning you want to on it.
Right.
So, get this. Well, I mean, you know this, but the listeners may not. An affirmative defense cannot be considered by the judge at a preliminary hearing. At least in Wisconsin, that's the rule.
That's true.
Hearsay is admissible, and an objection to hearsay coming in is, you know, just automatically overruled. In fact, you could probably be found in contempt for objecting to hearsay. You're not allowed to learn more about the case by asking questions that could lead to quote unquote discovery. I mean, I love that objection because
it's not a deposition.
That's not a real objection, by the way. In the list of objections that exist, that's not one of them. But, you know, judges at least are trained.
You could object about anything, Kirk.
Judges are trained to believe that, you know, this is not where you're supposed to learn more about the case. But you know when somebody is waiving a preliminary hearing, there's a question there that says, do you understand that you may learn more about your case if you had a preliminary hearing? Well, yeah, right. Even though if you have one, you don't learn more about your case. So the way it works now is that they could bring the janitor in from the hallway and say, hey, look at this piece of paper, and then I'm going to call you to the stand, and I'm going to ask you what it says. And that would be fine because hearsay is admissible, and the person doesn't have to know anything other than being familiar with, you know, what's in the complaint. So anyway, this is the same procedure they're following in the Cause case. And the lawyers, I mean, I think, you know, rightfully so, I suppose, raised the issue that this was a meaningless preliminary hearing and they want one where they're going to have a right to confront the accuser.
Well, they have a client who's got endless money and they can mount those kind of challenges.
Right.
So, you know, more power to them. I'd do the same thing if I had the money.
And there's a lot of reasons why a statutory provision doesn't necessarily – I hate to use the word – trump – doesn't necessarily trump a constitutional principle because just because the legislature said something has to go a particular way. If it actually does violate your confrontation rights – but that's the problem because preliminary hearings are not deemed as adversarial as the rest of the process. It's really to aid the court. That's how we look at the case law that deals with an interpretation of what the function of a preliminary hearing is. There's really two things. One, to prevent a person who is in custody from remaining in custody if there is not a basis for charges to proceed. But two, to give a fact finder, the judge who's presiding over the preliminary hearing, information upon which to make a decision as to whether or not there is probable cause to proceed. So the fact that it's viewed as not an ultimate disposition of facts, and since judges are supposed to, if they're following the rules, take facts presented as true unless they are completely implausible. In other words, a judge can believe that someone is lying yet still have to take those facts as true for purposes of preliminary hearing.
Yeah, I've actually never understood exactly in the legal context what implausible means or plausibility because, you know, I mean, instead of credibility, as you well know, and it's really just sort of, I think, as a distinction without meaning. That's my personal opinion.
Right. And those of us that practice in this area, that's the debate we have on an ongoing basis with these preliminary hearings is that judges will say, credibility is not an issue. Plausibility is the only issue. But how do you distinguish between the two? If you're trying to say
they're
that
the
a witness,
same thing to me.
They are. I mean, I if know, you look like, them up both in the dictionary, there's very little difference in the yeah. definition. But anyway, the thing going
we
on
make the law, but anyways, go ahead.
But what the lawyers are doing in the Cosby case is something that we lawyers have already tried.
failed by
raising this up to our Court of Appeals that appears to be somewhat and the Supreme Court particularly seems to be particularly disinclined to agree with anything that defense has to say when the word fairness is invoked. Because you know what? If you talk about fairness, and doesn't that seem like one of the most pure principles that you can argue? I mean, you're not talking about trying to gain anything that is unfair. You're talking about fairness, equality, something that we can't argue is a bad thing.
Fairness is like obscenity. As Justice Potter said, I know it when I see it.
Right. But, you know, if you use the word fairness in an appeal, you will lose.
That is not
a word they like to hear in the appellate courts, because fairness doesn't really matter. You know, but anyway, that was more than 60 seconds, but sorry about
that.
Well,
that's fine.
We got time for another topic if you want to pick one.
All right. You know what? We'll start with it, but we're not going to be able to finish this topic.
All right.
The FBI, in all their wisdom, and in some cases, I have a lot of respect for the FBI, but here, what they want to do is to expand their power. Just like they were trying to do with this showcase with Apple, you know.
The Apple phone.
Right. But now what they're trying to do is they want an actual statutory exception to the warrant requirement. And they want to get internet browser history without a warrant in terrorism and spy cases.
Okay.
And they want to amend the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. And some of the tech firms have refused to provide data.
Okay. Well, isn't this the path we already went down when a lot of the Patriot Act provisions were repealed? I mean, haven't we already but when that happened, when the Patriot Act was, you know.
Well, what they want to be able to just get the it's totally related to that. And they want to be able to get them with national security letters.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
And we're not going to be able to cover all this right now. We'll have to continue this next week, but
we'll pick it up next week.
It's just too big of a topic. National security letter is something where, I'm an FBI agent. I'm going to write a letter saying, hey, this is part of the national security investigation. You have to give me this data. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. They don't have to prove it to a judge. They don't have to prove it to anybody. They just have to say that I think so.
That's scary, man. That really is.
The whole Patriot Act thing is scary.
You know, there's a lot of things that are – when you're talking about things that are in the realm of privacy, and I think browsing history is really private. I mean, it says a lot about a person. It can tell someone if you're cheating on your wife. It can say if you're into pornography of different types. It can – if you're trying to refinance your home, if you're, you know, looking to adopt a child. I mean, you can tell a lot about a person's life.
I think when the Supreme Court – ruled on the search of a phone case. Remember that? Without a warrant.
Yeah.
And they really spoke to that. They addressed that very issue. We need to pick this up next week.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all the time we have. So we hope you've enjoyed listening to Legal Defense. Tune in any Saturday you like, hopefully every Saturday. But if you can't catch us actually on Saturday at 8 a.m. from 9 to 9 a.m., you can listen to the podcast anytime you wish. Download it to your mobile device or click on the link on your computer and you can just listen at your leisure anytime you wish. But we hope to hear you tuning in next week. This has been Legal Defense with Kirk O'Bear. Have a great weekend.